podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Franny Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia.
In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to InThatNumberPodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome back to another episode of In That Number. This is episode 161. And what a treat we have in store for you today. With the season just 1 week away, we get the lowdown on everything you need to know with our very special guest. But before we get him in, let's get in the Moscow Mush, Kevin Milverton. And also we welcome back Tim Bazance. Guys, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm alive and kicking.
I was hoping for a little bit more of a, you know, enthusiastic response there, Kevin.
Yes!
That's better. Yeah. Tim, how are you? It's good to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back. It's 5 a.m. here in North Carolina. The frogs are live and well still this
mating.
Morning. Yes, they are out. Well, their mating calls are quite over, and now it feels like they're just dying outside. It just transitions to go from like a ribbit to a really loud squeaking sound that I just feel like I hear dolphins outside, but I definitely don't live on the ocean. I live in the central of the coast, the central estate that is.
Well, I mean, we can't hear them, so it's fine.
That's good.
Guys, are you excited about the new season and, you know, to get back into this hectic routine?
I'm nervous.
What, about the show or about the season?
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, I am. I am, to be honest. But I mean, I went to St. Mary's yesterday. It was the first time back. And you know, it was right there that I felt, yeah, it's so good to be back. Seeing Prowsey take a corner right in front of me again, it was like, yeah, it felt like I haven't been away. So it was it's good to get
I'm
back.
Really excited to play us in Football Manager. It's going to be fantastic because I think it's like playing on easy mode. If you ever buy all the youth up and put them in one area. It's basically
pretty much what Ralph is doing.
Yes, exactly. I think the majority of the team can't even drink in the U.S., which is crazy to think about. But beyond that, it's looking very promising in 3 years.
Playing Championship Manager in order to prepare for being a Championship Manager.
Oh, dear. Right. Anyway, today we're going to discuss the arrivals, the departures. We're going to go through preseason and we'll get those predictions in. And to help us do this today, we have the Athletics Saints reporter, Jacob Tanswell. Jacob, a massive welcome to In That Number. And thank you so much for sharing your precious time with us.
No, thank you very much for having me on. I know that we're in different time zones, so I really, really appreciate it as well.
Yeah. So we got Kev. What time is that over there for you?
It's 12:15.
Oh, it's not too bad for you then. It's just gone lunch. Yeah, and it's 10:15 over here in Southampton, in sunny Southampton. And Tim, what's the weather like over there?
Well, it's really dark outside and it is 90 degrees. So let me do some quick math off the top of my head. So it's going to be something like 28 Celsius.
That's too bad for me.
And it's still dark out. So it'll only get to about 31, 32 degrees Celsius here today. With a little rain.
Mm. Don't like that. Anyway, Jacob, how is life with the Athletic and covering Saints?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Really enjoy it. I think we're just over a month in now, and it's just, I've covered Southampton before a couple of years ago, so it's just great to be back and covering a team I support. Is yeah, it's one of my dreams, and yeah, really looking forward to everything getting underway and the new season starting, really.
Yeah, I've been following you ever since you came on board with the Athletic, and it's your content's great, and hence why we've got you on the show today. So it'll be great to have a chat and find out about our new players.
Definitely, thank you.
Yeah, could you tell us how you fell into your role at the Athletic? Obviously, you've been covering football for a while. What's your journey been like?
Yeah, so I used to play in the academy for Bournemouth just briefly, and I realised about 16. I was much better talking about it and writing about it than I was playing it. Quite a big difference, actually. And then I just started writing. I went to Eastleigh, obviously locally, and I just started writing, and my passion just grew and grew. And then I briefly covered Southampton during the lockdown season, going to games and writing, and just really that's how I started to grow a bit more of a platform. And then on the back of that, I then had a season last year at Bournemouth, covering Bournemouth, their promotion season, which was fantastic. And then, obviously, we've heard that Dan Sheldon was going to be leaving. And, yeah, just got approached from there. And it was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down.
Absolutely, yeah. And what's it going to be like playing Bournemouth for you? Is it going to be a bit...
No, it'd be great. I think they all knew that I supported Southampton, and I'm from Southampton, so there's no rivalry like that. But yeah, I do have a soft spot for Bournemouth for sure.
So I do have one question. So thanks so very much, Jacob, for coming on. Did you ever anticipate those two pictures of you being a little kid in the first article you got there on June 20th would be now blasted out to the world to see? So for the description here, one of them is him with quite the missing teeth in a white and red wig, yelling and screaming in the stands, which is a beautiful picture. And then him obviously rushing the field and looking like you are on cloud nine at the moment. I couldn't tell you exactly what year that was because, but that's still both pretty cool pictures that you got that you are able to show and share and connect with the Saints fans.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wasn't sure whether to include them in that introductory piece, thinking, you know, for one, they're quite embarrassing. Two, do I really want to, you know, if fans start turning on me, do I really want them to see that type of picture? Because I know that'll be brought up, you know, whenever I do something bad. So I thought maybe not, but then I just thought, yeah, let's just go for it. And I think the first one with, you know, quite the mile-long gap in my teeth was Stern John keeping Southampton up in, what, circa 2007, maybe, that was?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second picture, when I ran onto the pitch, was obviously that Coventry game.
Promotion.
Yeah. So those are the two stand-up memories for me, as well as Idiarchus's missed penalty, which I said about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. I want to let you know that's what actually endeared me to you is your willingness to be vulnerable in the scope of everything being today's day and age. Once you put everything on the website on the internet, yeah, you can the whole world knows. So I appreciate that, and that really was pretty cool to see those two pictures.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry about the Saints fans turning against you because we all know they turn against Ralph straight away as soon as one result goes wrong. So don't worry, you're safe.
That's good to know. But no, I thought if I'm going to be a Southampton correspondent, I've got to show that I am a Southampton fan as well. I think that's something that fans probably wanted and something I think they can build a rapport with.
Absolutely. Just don't go to Manchester now, will you?
That seems to be the theme, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got a few seconds here. We're just going to start by talking about the ins and outs between the seasons. And I've seen many departures, really, from the first team. Fraser Forster was released, as was Harry Lewis, Romelo Mitchell, and my man crush, Shane Long. Who's since joined Reading. Fraser's gone to Spurs, Harry Lewis to Bradford, and Romelo Mitchell, who, yeah, when he signed for us, we had such high expectations for him, but he's gone off to West Brom. Sent a few players out on loan as well. So Caleb Watts has gone to Morecambe, Kazim Malek beat to Ross County, Dan Lundaloo to Cheltenham, Will Smallbone to Stoke, Keggs Chalky to Exeter, and Thierry Small to Port Vale. Out with that lot, is there anyone that you were disappointed in losing?
I think a lot of fans would have liked to kept Fraser Forster, wouldn't they? And then you think, okay, maybe Gavin Bazuna comes in. They've been talking to him since February. You think, okay, I can see why they've let Fraser Forster go. But other than that, I think they're all quite fair. I think Thierry Small, there was a chance that he would hang around in the first team picture, but then it became clear, especially towards the back end of, you know, Austria, the Watford game as well, that he needed to go on loan. So I think they're all quite obvious departures, and I like to think there will be a few more as well to come.
I mean, me personally, Jacob, I was disappointed to see Kazim Alegbi go because he was fantastic for the B team last year, and I was hoping he was going to make that transition to the first team this season. But yeah. I mean, he's going to be getting regular football at Ross County, so that can't be a bad
thing. No, definitely. I think you've seen what Ross County did last year as well, some slams and players, and I think the references they got, you know, they improved substantially after that, because Ross County is a club that I think the way they operate is quite conducive to loan players, and Kazim hasn't really had men's football, so making the step up, you know, he's not exactly the biggest either, making a step up to the first team seemed probably too steep at the time. So if he just goes to Ross County, almost bridge the gap between youth team football and senior team football, then hopefully next year he'll be better for it.
Yeah, and I was quite surprised with Will Smallbone as well, because I mean, he's had a lot of first team football, and Caleb Watts as well. I know he was injured last season, but he's had first team football. Dan and Lindaloo, I'm not so sure he's ever going to make it, in my personal opinion. He's at that age now where he should be playing for us, but you know, he just can't quite make the grade for some reason.
I think so too. I think he was a little bit unlucky last year. I know he went on loan, didn't he? And then a couple of days later, he did that hamstring, which ruled out for the rest of the season. So he's not at the best of luck, but I think you'd like to think that now, you know, he's back, he's returned to the club, he can really push on and have a better loan spell. And it's probably, it's same as with a lot of players, really. It's kind of his last chance this season, so we'll be really interested to see his progress.
If Caleb Watts didn't have that injury, do you think he would have been sent out on loan again, or do you think he would have been given more of a chance?
I think he would still be sent on loan. It's just similar to Will Smallbone, because although he's been in and around the squad for a while, he had made 22 first-team appearances in 3 years because of injuries. He needs to get first-team football, and as much as I thought he was really quite impressive in Austria, he needed to be playing week in, week out, and with the amount of midfield that Southampton have got, and perhaps they might bring even more in, but it's not good enough to sit on the bench or be in and around the squad for another season. He's not really played that much for being, 22, almost 23? Mm-hmm. So I think with him and Caleb Watts, they do need to get first team football to play, because it's all right being in the first team, but they'll be, restricted to Carabao Cup, FA Cup appearances at most, really? Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a sensible decision.
Right, okay, signings then. This is what we really want to know about. We'll start with Gavin Bazunu then from Man City, 16 million quid. I say, we all knew that the loss of Big Fraser and Harry Lewis, they were allowed to leave, obviously contracts up, and it was essential to get a keeper in as soon as possible before pre-season, and that's exactly what's happened. But what can you tell us about Gavin Bazunu? You know, why should we be excited for this kid?
Well, I was covering Bournemouth last year. Mark Travers was by far, in my opinion, the best championship goalkeeper there. And I think he's superb. And I think he'll step up to the Premier League quite easily. The fact that Gavin Bazunu is Ireland's number one, ahead of Cameron Kelleher at Liverpool and Travers at Bournemouth, I think that tells you straight away, you know, how highly regarded he is and his potential. I know most Premier League clubs inquired about him at some point last season. In Everton were really, really interested, and I think Bazunu decided that he'd be better in a better environment at Southampton. So there's a lot to be excited about. You know, as I said, the fact that he's Ireland's number one, the fact that there's loads of Premier League clubs that were interested in him, and he's a guy that thought, okay, I'll be better served going to Southampton where I can develop. And the way Southampton are playing at the moment, where their goalkeepers are off frequently outside the box, I think Alex McCarthy made double the amount of short passes against Monaco as he ever has done in his career in any game. So there's a lot to be excited about in terms of distribution, and Bazunu, that's one of his strengths. I was talking to a guy at Portsmouth, and Danny Cowley would often say, Gavin, you've got to stand in your box sometimes because you're so eager to come out and be a third centre-back. So, yeah, it's going to be really exciting, and it's a new wave of goalkeeper that Southampton arguably haven't had for a while, with Forster and McCarthy in goal.
Yeah, and hopefully we can keep him around for a little bit longer. And obviously he's bettered himself from last season, of course. But do you feel that he gets the start right away, or is it more likely that Ralph turns to Maka? Because if we're to go off pre-season, I mean, Ralph has rather deliberately played them both on and off, and both getting exactly 225 minutes each pre-season.
I think that's just, it's a toss of a coin in terms of what we think, isn't it? Because there's nothing to suggest one or the other, isn't it? But it was always going to be a shootout. I think Bazzuni probably had the edge heading into pre-season, judging by him coming in, signing fans. I think prefer Gavin Bazzuni, judging by what you hear on Twitter. But that's not always the best barometer, I guess. It's going to be between Ralph and Andrew Sparks, the goalkeeping coach, and a decision is likely to be made now, tomorrow morning, start of the week on that, and then they'll start training in that shape for Tottenham. But if you have to ask me, I probably would go for Gavin Bazunu, but I'm not too worried about either, because as much as I know Alex McCarthy gets slandered and criticised a lot on Twitter, I don't think he's bad as people say he is. And he is adapting, because he was a goalkeeper that would have come off his line and wasn't very good with his feet. And I think he's made a lot of improvements, despite sometimes showing some teething issues.
Yeah, I'm like you. I think Bazunu will start, and that he probably would get my vote. But I'm not so down on Maka. I'm not. Yeah, just I think his good outweighs the bad, and people remember the bad a lot more. That's the way I see Alex McCarthy.
I think so too. So there's a handful of players that are in a situation in terms of you always feel like you're looking out for that mistake and kind of neglecting the other 89 minutes or so. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, won't it?
Yeah, I mean that leads me to the next question about signings. We've re-signed Willy Caballero for another year, and also brought in Mateusz Lis from Altai on a free. So what kind of role do you see for the remaining two goalkeepers? We sort of suspected that Lis was going to go out on loan straight away, but that hasn't happened.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet, because that was one of the, that was very, very likely in, when he signed. So I still expect him to go out on loan, but I think that's judging by the lack of pre-season minutes in the first team. Willy Caballero, I don't think he knows. I think he recognises and understands that he's not going to play unless something goes wrong. But from what you hear as well, the reports you get from Willy Caballero, the players seem to love him in that change room. He's so, so key. He keeps the morale up, because towards the end of last season, I'm sure things got pretty tough in that change room. But he's experienced, he's seen it all. He's come in, he's signed a new contract to essentially be a mentor to Gavin Bazunu as well, on and off the field, the way he prepares for games, his professionalism. He's really, really key. And he's almost playing that role of Stuart Taylor that was there a couple of years back. Where he's not going to play, but he's just good to have him around in the change room. You see that a lot of Premier League clubs now. Scott Carson at Man City, Lee Grant at Man United for a couple of years. These keepers are really, really important, even if they're not making an impact on the pitch, so to speak.
Yeah, it's almost as if we've got another goalkeeping coach there as well. Just sign him up for another year. It's not going to cost anything apart from the wages. And and like you said, if something does go wrong, then he can jump in. It's I don't disagree with it at all. I think it's great.
Definitely. I think he's a superb signing and a super guy, but from what you hear.
Yeah. And more signings then. Armel Belakotchap from Bochum, German under 21. Tell us more about him, because, played an hour against Leipzig, second half against Klagenfurt, first half against Watford, limited time against Monaco. I think he came on the 77th. And he played 73 minutes yesterday against Villarreal. What have you made of him so far?
I think he's good. When he signed, I spent about 2 days watching most of his games from last year. And the first thing that stuck out for me was, my God, you are very, very similar to Salisu in the way you play.
Oh, God, does that mean he's going to get booked every week?
Quick, front foot, aggressive, but he's lacking that passing progression, which is something I worry about playing with a back three. Because apart from Jack Stevens, who, his future's quite unclear, there's not really anyone that can play out from the back. And if Southampton were going to sign a centre-back, I thought they would kind of get someone in that mould. But, like Salisu, Belakotchap's potential is vast. And, the way Southampton are playing in possession, the two wing-backs are pushing really, really high forward, which means, the two outside centre-backs in Salisu and Belakotchap I've got a lot of space. So I think one of the things that comes across with Bela Kotchap is he's very quick and he's very comfortable in manning large areas on the pitch, which perhaps Benrick isn't, and that's why he's playing in the middle of the three. So he's raw. I think it'll be a risk to starting with Spurs, but it looks like that'll be the case. But you know, I'm not sure we're going to talk about it. But Jan Valery, I think he's been really impressive pre-season, and he could be perhaps pushing for a spot in the back three as well.
Yeah, Bela Kotchap seems to me that he's like a passion project of Ralph. It's just someone that he has to mould, youngster coming in, and something that he wants to get his print on and you know, turn into the defender that we need.
I think so too, but it's just whether they're going to lose a few games and they get hammered, will Bela Kotchap still keep his place in his team?
Yeah, I hope it's not another Kevin Danso.
Vegard Foran.
Yeah, and foreign, yeah. Oh, God.
Next up, Romeo Lavia. Very young and very raw. You've seen a lot of him in pre-season. What do you make of him?
He's the one I'm most excited about, to be honest with you, because it's quite funny that Ralph doesn't think, Aurel May can play as a holding midfielder on his own anymore, because he hasn't got the mobility. So you like to think that Lavia's going to come in straight away. And for a guy that has made two cup appearances for Man City, he's going to be thrown straight in and he's going to play a lot, similar to what Tino Livramento did last year. I've watched a lot of him. He was too good, way too good for Premier League 2 last year. And I've watched him a few times with Belgium under-19s. He looks really good going forward as well. He just looks like all action as well. And he doesn't look like the type of midfielder that's going to shy away. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be really instrumental to the way Southampton play, try to play out from the back as well. And to play out from the back and play in that position is, you require a lot of confidence, and he's 18, so it's going to be difficult. But from what you hear, Pep Guardiola rated him really, really highly, and I think he wanted to keep him in his plans. But the problem was, it's going to be another 2 to 3 years until Guardiola deemed him ready. So coming to Southampton perhaps for a couple of years, learning. I'm really, really excited to see where he goes.
Yeah, I think you need to listen to Pep as well, don't you? But when the transfer broke, I read your tweets and you said that he hasn't been pigeonholed into a set type of midfielder which could suit us. Mm. Does this mean that he's going to be given free rein across the middle and change, with the game as necessary? Or do you see him as a sole number six?
I think Ralph sees him as a sole number six at the moment, but it depends on the system. Because at the moment, they only play one holding midfielder, where I think the second half yesterday, it was Ward-Prowse alongside Lavia at times. So
yes,
that would suit Lavia as well, because for Belgium, he played a little bit further forward to the right of a midfield three, similar to what Aurel Romeu is doing now. And he's very good at timing his runs to get in the box. He's a very powerful runner without the ball as well. So I think he can play in a lot of positions in centre midfield, not just necessarily sticking him at the base of it.
Yeah, and I saw him in the flesh for the first time against Villarreal yesterday. He came off late, so I got to see a lot of him. And I do like him. I mean, he doesn't look it, but he has got some strength there. And he looks like he's very good protecting the ball, and he doesn't mind shoving people around either.
Mm. I think one thing that struck me when I watched him against Watford was he's very similar to Paul Pogba in a way. He loves to feel physical contact. He receives the ball, and his hand's always looking for some physical contact. He likes to shield the ball. And it's a little bit of an issue if there's two players pressing you. But in terms of holding one player off, he's very, very comfortable. And in midfield, where it's quite congested, I think that really suits him and suits Southampton as well.
A lot of bookings come in then for shirt pulling, I see.
I'd imagine so, yeah. But he is quicker than Romeu. So you like to think on counter-attacks, he'll be a little bit quicker in making those recovery tackles.
Yes, and Joe Aribo, I'm most excited about this kid. I mean, tweeted the fact that he's played the most football on planet Earth last season. very versatile as well. Yeah. So they say, I mean, what more can you tell us about him? Because, I mean, that party piece yesterday, that goal against Villarreal was incredible.
Amazing, wasn't it? I asked Aribo after the game, said, what's your favourite position? And he just kind of shrugged his shoulders to him. Anywhere that I'm basically in the best position to shoot or make an impact. So I think he likes playing in a number 10 role. And he did that second half yesterday and he looked fantastic. I thought even against Monaco, he came alive second half. He's so strong. He's got this dribbling style that just bustles his way through players. And that was just so perfectly encapsulated, in his goal yesterday.
Yeah.
He's a deeply religious man. He's very humble. He's very quiet off the field. He runs. As you said, he played the most minutes on the planet last year. So he, on the face of things, you think he suits Ralph so easily because he's adaptable. He says yes to anything. He's got a can-do attitude. He's durable as well. He can press. He is the perfect Ralph Arsenal slam-to-the signing, isn't he?
Oh, I'd like to think so. But, I mean, where do you see Ralph utilising him? Where can we get the best out of him?
He played in the midfield three yesterday, didn't he? And I'm not sure. I like to see him further forward because he really looks like he can make an impact, you know, in that forward area with assists and goals. So I wouldn't be too against it. If they're going to stick with that 3-5-2 system, I wouldn't be too against him playing up front next on the gates first.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. But if it's the 4-2-2-2, I'd like to see him in one of those number 10 roles for sure.
Yeah, I will. I mean, I don't like the three at the back, the wing backs. I'm not sure that is the best thing that we can do, leaving that sole striker up front. But if he's roaming around behind him, then, you know, that's going to get some bums out of seats, I'm sure.
Mm. Similar to Stuart Armstrong in a way, isn't it? He's very good dribbling going forward.
Yeah, and the last edition, Sekou Mara from Bordeaux signed on a 4-year deal for 11 million quid. He's only 20 years old. Forwards came through the youth system at Paris Saint-Germain, scored 6 goals for Bordeaux last season. Obviously, he's a late signing, we haven't really seen much of him. Did the play against Villarreal. What do you make of him coming?
I think he's got so much potential. I know they're really, really excited about that signing because I don't think they saw that opportunity coming because they were looking at Emmanuel Dennis for 20 million. I think that was the fee that Watford were suggesting. And Sekou Mara, because of Bordeaux's absolute dire financial state, as well as Slams have been in the market for a striker, I think he made really perfect sense. He's not going to come in and to be the guy you really rely on. But at the same time, he's going to be a guy that's going to feature heavily. And, you know, you speak to people around him, they say one of his best attributes is heading. And you think, if you're going to have wing-backs who are going to cross the ball a lot, I think it could be quite useful for the way Slams would attack. So it gives you something different. I think they desperately needed that striker, and he's got really big belief in himself. He turned down a contract at PSG when he was 12 because he wasn't playing as a number 9. That takes a lot. Takes a lot of courage. Faith in your ability, and I think he's got that. So even when it was his 20th birthday yesterday, I don't think coming to Slamton or the Premier League is going to faze him too much.
Something I noticed when they were doing the warm-ups as well, he looks well settled already. He looks like he was having a laugh and a joke with his new teammates and stuff. He looks like he's going to I know he's going to need more time to develop, and you can't expect goals straight away, but he does look like he's settling in nicely.
No,
so
definitely.
I am excited.
Definitely, because I think there's a French contingent there. Jan Valery, he's really a good guy by all accounts. He helps players settle in. He gives a lot of advice. And although he's only young himself, I think he's a really good guy to have in the dressing room as well. And, you see from his stats, I think he shoots the most, top 4% of any striker in top 5 European leagues. So you don't think that's gonna help sometimes when Slams are struggling to perhaps unlock the door. So just shooting from anywhere would be quite good. I think he ranks really highly for pressing as well. So similar to Rebo, he looks like a perfect Arsenal signing.
I mean, you mentioned that Lavia was the one that you were most excited of these new signings. But was there a player that you feel didn't get enough time in pre-season? Obviously, Mara's only just come in, so I'll exclude him from that. But was there someone that you wanted to see more of?
Yeah, Dinel Simu, I thought. I would like to see him a little bit more. I know they've got so many centre-backs, but he's one that, going back to my point about perhaps not being the best at progressing the ball out from the back, he's one that I thought could help with that. And I know he's only young, and he only was in League Two last year, but he had a really, really good loan spell at Carlisle, probably the only Southampton player that's had a top loan spell in the last couple of years. So he's one that I would like to see a little bit more. I think he got one half against Leipzig, if I remember. And he's probably going to go on loan. But yeah, he's one that I would have liked to see, especially if Bednarik and Stevens do end up leaving.
Yeah, and in terms of more transfers coming in, or indeed out, have you got any latest reports on Liam Delap?
He looks like he's going to Stoke, from what you hear. And Dan Sharon reported yesterday. Now he's in Manchester. But it's perfect for him, really. you know, City do not want to lose him permanently, and I think that speaks volumes of how much they rate him, because they were prepared to let, you know, likes of Bazunu and Lavia go with buyback clauses, but I think they see Delap as someone that can come in and make an impact next year. So I think a loan to a championship club. I know Burnley were interested, but it looks like Stoke are in advanced talks. And fair play to Southampton, because they brought him in permanently. I don't think they were maybe too keen to get him on loan. I think otherwise that deal maybe would have happened. And they put in a £16 million bid. And, you know, that's a lot of money to spend on a striker that's unproven at this level.
That did surprise me.
Yeah. It shows they have got money, and Sports Republic are backing him without necessarily having to sell, which is a refreshing change.
Yeah. In your, well, you must have plenty of sources, but is there any more signings imminent?
I think it could be a week where we see things move along. I'm not sure there'll be any signings, but I would like to think there'll be more of an emphasis on players going out the door, because there's a lot of areas on the pitch at Southampton that Southampton would like to improve and enhance, but they have to shift out a few. I think centre midfield's an option. Centre back, of course, Levi Colwill was one that they really, really, really like.
Yeah, local lad. Yeah,
exactly. They really like, but having what it's going to be 5, 6, even 7 centre backs for 3 positions, that's way too much. So you have to get rid of what couple, maybe on loan or sell in Stevens, Bednarik's case. Midfield as well. Who knows what happens with Diallo? I think that's going to be interesting to see. Number 10, I think Elianusi, he could be going with Walcott, with Redmond. They're guys that could go. You know, I know Elianusi has been talked about a new contract, so that's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I think a decision either way will be made between now and deadline day. So that could be a position. And of course, the striker, which Ralph has made pretty clear that he wants another one. So yeah, busy heading in and out the door.
Who do you think we need most before the window shuts?
What position?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to say striker again. Although there is a thing to say, maybe a winger if Redmond goes, because there doesn't really seem to be that change of gear, that change of pace. I know Gineppo has been okay, improving, I think he's been quite good, but he's the only guy that's really takes players on out wide in 1v1 area. So I'd like to see perhaps change of speed, a winger, you know, a tricky number 10, because I don't think there's that much creativity, although, you know, Ariba and Stuart Armstrong are really quite good bustling midfielders. So I think definitely in that, you know, last third of the pitch is somewhere that Southampton needs to be more clinical and more creative in.
So going into the summer, was there any consideration with Tino's injury and how they would approach a transfer strategy, potentially with whether it be a right back cover or any fullbacks in general?
That's somewhere I forgot, actually. I think fullback is a position that Southampton will be looking for as well. But I know they're playing with wing backs, and you can kind of get away with it because Gineppo can play left wing back. But I do think you do need a fullback, because if Kyle Walker-Peters gets injured, then Southampton are in trouble. So that's a position they're looking at. I know they've inquired and been interested in Feyenoord's Marcus Pedersen, see where that goes. Kabore from Man City on loan. And then you straight away think, OK, Joe Shields' connection there, that could be somewhere. So looking at those two players, I think Southampton might get someone in. Whether it's a short-term fix until Tino's back in, you know, perhaps next year after the World Cup, remains to be seen, but I think fullback is an area, definitely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that we're worried about, to be honest.
I must admit, I haven't watched every minute of the pre-season. I've been limiting myself to highlights, so I'm really missing out on a bit. But that first match against Leipzig in Austria, Adam Armstrong with the only goal for Southampton as sort of a glancing header, wasn't it, from Smallbone? But yeah, let me in 3, and Bazunu pulling off a wonder save in the first half, I remember. And,
yes.
And McCarthy just being his usual McCarthy and letting in 3 in the second half.
That's harsh.
Is that a fair assessment, would you say?
I'm not too sure about the McCarthy thing, you can't really take much away from that. It's the first game of pre-season. It was really quite you can't take much away from that. One thing I did like is that Leipzig with their press, they did press a lot, and for the first game of pre-season, that's quite brave, and I think that helps Southampton, encourage them to work on their patterns of play, pass forward a little bit more, because they tend to when a team sits back or it's quite a slow tempo, they do tend to become a little bit stodgy, don't they? They just recycle ball across the back. So it was quite a good tempo from because of Leipzig's press. So I think that was a really good workout. Adam Armstrong, of course, scored. I think he's been okay for using it. He's one of them that hopefully can take those. That's, I know he missed a penalty in the next game, but he's hopefully one of those that could take it into the season. But yeah, on the whole, the balance of play, they Southampton did okay, but you know, as I said, you can't really take much away from the first game of pre-season, especially.
The next two games, we had Klagenfurt and Watford. They were both 0-0 draws. I mean, I paid for that Watford game, and I wish I hadn't afterwards. I wasn't impressed with it, really. But again, you know, it's pre-season. It's all about fitness. It's getting used to new positions, and Ralph's tried out new formations and stuff. So we are getting to see the new signings, you know, come in and, you know, these new formations take shape.
Yeah, it wasn't the most entertaining of two games, was it? The Klagenfurt one was good because you had the storyline of Patrick Hasenhüttl, Ralph's son, which I quite enjoyed, and that gave me something to write about.
Oh, yes, and you had an interview with him, didn't you, as yeah, well, which I saw.
Yeah, yeah, really, really good guy. And, yeah, it made for quite a good interesting interview, I thought. But go back to the game. Yeah, I think the 3-5-2 was still into practice. And one thing you noticed, similar to the Monaco game, is when the subs come on, Walker-Peters, Armstrong, they make a huge difference to that way of playing. Walker-Peters is Southampton's best attacking outlet, in my opinion. And I think he came on and he instantly pushed Klagenfurt back. And it resulted in the penalty, which obviously Armstrong missed, but that was okay. The Watford game was difficult because I was there and it was such a small pitch. It was so dry. And it felt like there was 40 players on the pitch. There was no time with the ball. And that's something that you're not going to see much in the Premier League because obviously the ground's better and bigger. So it was a really frantic tempo and no team got their foot on the ball and just started to play their way. So it was a bit ping-pong, really, and you can't really gauge much out of that. But Southampton didn't really create much on the flip side of things. And one positive was that James Ward-Prowse was back, despite some rumblings on Twitter who didn't believe that he was injured in Austria. So that's always a positive and a relief.
Yeah, and the game against Monaco, fantastic second half, of course. And then yesterday, the Villarreal game. I mean, I was sat next to a guy who's, when Saints went 1-0 down, he kind of, his mood just dropped. And the abuse started right away. There was a lot of shouting at the referee. And it was like, oh, good. I'm glad to be back now. But a lot of panicking already. But I thought the Villarreal game was okay. I mean, the Villarreal are a good side.
Really
obviously, they've got Emery managing. Decent side, Villarreal, Europa Conference League team. But I was quite impressed with it, and we had a lot of good spells in that game, especially when we equalised, and then we got a second, which was ruled off. Mm. But from that point, that spell, we looked really good.
I agree, but maybe it's because Southampton are a little bit further along in their pre-season preparations in Villarreal, and that should kind of allow them to come on stronger straight away after the second half. But take nothing away from them. I think it's really good practice for the Spurs game, because Villarreal, fantastic on the ball. They're really ball hungry, and the way Southampton are playing, they're not pressing quite as much now. They've kind of tailored it, so they're getting used to working in a defensive shape without necessarily pressing all the time, so being nice and compact and stuff like that. So that first half, although Villarreal were leading, I like to think Southampton were quite organised, the way they in their shape. They didn't get played through too much, only on counter attacks and down the channels, which resulted in their goal. So it was really quite a good dress rehearsal almost, because I think that's what the way Southampton are going to approach the Spurs game. So a good difference, a good contrast of styles to what they faced. You know, I've talked about Leipzig, who pressed completely and they weren't really interested in having much of the ball, whereas Villarreal were. So I think Southampton have experienced quite a few different challenges, which hopefully should stand him in good stead.
Yeah, and at the same time, I'm trying not to be too panicked about it, but Saints broke quite a lot in that Villarreal game, and they looked like they were going to do something with it, and then of course it went backwards again, and it was just being recycled along the back. Wasted opportunities. I am quite concerned with the fact that we haven't got that creativity still, that they don't seem to know what to do when they get in those deep positions, and it almost seems to me like I was thinking the only way that we're going to score is from a set piece or from a Villarreal mistake, and of course that didn't happen. So is that something that you're concerned about, like lack of goals again?
How many times have you said that you think Southampton are only going to score from a set piece? So I think that's it's kind of the thing really in recent years. I always think to myself, if Southampton are working their way in and around the box, and they need someone just on the edge of that box just to take a deep breath and play that pass through, who's got the composure and the quality to do it? And I don't really see that player. They haven't got like a Tadic anymore who can just, whilst everything else is just rushing and busy around him, who can just calm down and just thread that ball through. So I do think they miss that a bit of guile in their play. I know Stuart Armstrong was really good. I really think, I love him. I think he's a fantastic player. But he's a little bit, he's a little bit rushed and panicky sometimes in that final third. So it's just something that can just calm down. It's something Southampton's still missing. And I think one of the counter-attacks Southampton had yesterday was Moussa Djenepo, where he just got the ball and ran and ran and got that free kick. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But maybe when you get into that position, if you have someone that's just a little bit calmer who can just pick that pass to one of the strikers, then I think that Southampton will hopefully score a few more goals and create a lot more chances out of it.
Here's hoping. But on a whole, like pre-season in general, were you happy with it?
It was okay. If that's what Arsenal wants to go with. I'm really surprised that he didn't change system. I know he tweaked a little bit second half yesterday, but go to a back four at some point, because if you have a bad start to the season, I'm sure a lot of fans will start saying, get rid of the back three, get rid of the back three. So
they already are.
Well, yeah. So I'm surprised they haven't. It's been okay. And as Ralph said yesterday, there's been times in other pre-seasons where they've smashed opponents and then they rock up to Burnley away and they're woefully underprepared. So I think time will show next week against Spurs and the month of August. So it's been a pre-season that's been pretty standard. I was never expecting so too many goals, and I wasn't expecting too many goals conceded either. So yeah, it's been all right.
Just going into that first game against Spurs, what would you put your money on? Is he going to stick with a back three, or is he going to revert to the classic 4-2-2-2?
I think he sticks with a back three. I think it'll be strange if he went to the 4-2-2-2, despite not practicing it once in pre-season.
That'd
so,
be a very rough thing to do, though, wouldn't it?
I think he'll stick with the back three. The wing back, I think, is interesting because Perot, he's not had much game time. He's been injured a lot. And Gineppo's done well. And Spurs, you've got to remember, they play with a back three and wing back. So Southampton are going to match him out. It's going to be 1v1 out wide. Whether Gineppo's good enough to be 1v1 defensively against Jed Spence or Kowalewski is a different matter. But I do think Ralph is going to match him up, because I think they played a back three. I went to that game last year at home, Spurs, with Valerie at centre-back before Salisu got sent off. And that seemed to work quite well before he got up for the red card. So I like to think it's going to be similar to that and how Ralph approaches it.
Let's just hope it's not that high line again, and Son and Charleston and Kane just get around and completely pump us. But yeah, Tim, have you got any questions about pre-season at all?
Yeah, I guess they've experimented, and we played a few times last year with the 3-5-2 or the 5-3-2, however you want to see it match line up as. Do you know, I guess the emphasis of him wanting to look for a 3-5-2 and transition away from his traditional 4-2-2-2? And specifically, is there something with this year or transition and maybe in the backroom staff seeing something?
I think I wrote about that. I think it's purely the fundamental reason is because he wants to be better defensively. I think that he's kind of fed up looking at a team that's really quite vulnerable, and they always seem vulnerable. And when they're not playing well and the confidence is low, they get ripped apart a lot because the press then malfunctions. So I think that's the reason. And then I think I asked Ralph yesterday about the impact has going forward, and he says one less player in attack hampers the press, so we can't press like we used to, and that's something that is going to be really interesting to see how that pans out, because Southampton's press is what has been their bread and butter for the last 4 years, so it's slightly changing away from that and relying on back three of Bednarik, Salisu, Bella Kotjap, and then Lianka and Stevens to come in is a risk. But if they're confident, I've got a piece coming out on Ruben Sellers, the new assistant manager, and I spoke to a few of his old players, and they say he's really, really good at training a defence in terms of their positioning, their shape. So that's something that's to keep an eye on, and hopefully that's something that will benefit Southampton too.
Excellent. Right, we've got some questions now from our listeners. Tim, you're going to reel these off.
How would you describe what your writing style is? And I guess you grew up being a Saints fan, but really what inspired you to become a writer and I guess ultimately want to write for the Saints?
Yeah, so I like to think my writing style is it's different to my predecessors, so Dan and Carla. Carla, I'm probably more similar to in terms of our like the tactical analysis stuff. I like to do features, really do quite deep dives into that type of thing, where Dan's superb. He's a superb news collector, and he wrote some really, really informative pieces. And I like to think I'm probably in the middle of the two. I'm not quite as eccentric in writing style as Carl, but I do like to, and I enjoy writing about that. And the reason why I got into writing, because I, for my 12th birthday, I was given a tactics board for, and that was my main birthday present. And I thought that's a little bit strange, a little bit geeky. So I always liked the other side of football and analysing games and looking at, why did the manager do this? Why has he done this? What's the new style of play? And just spotting little changes and looking at things deeper than just a game of football. So women's football, B team football, the academy, the, you know, Slamton Foundation, for example. I love everything about the club rather than just always the football on it. So that's what's really got me into writing. It's something that I'm extremely passionate about. And I think journalism, especially now, we're moving away from match reports and stuff like that. And we have more scope to do the things that are really informative and really deep and in depth. So that's something that I'm really keen to do. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to join The Athletic, because they're the best at it, in my opinion.
That's absolutely fantastic, because it's a great lead into the second question is that if you have been a fan and being a writer of the team, how is it, what is it like to be impartial? Yeah. Do you have to be completely neutral, or can you talk and be really just own up to what you, to what you really say and feel? Because I feel there's a few articles, like the alarming implosion right off the bat, that obviously the headline there, but then the build-in from it. But then there's the Theo piece and some the young players article. Just those are the ones that stuck out off the top of my head. Just how do you balance all that as being a writer?
I think it's difficult. My last piece about the implosion stuff, I know the headline was like that, but there was no criticism. It was just a balanced and quite fair, accurate assessment of Ralph's current set of circumstances. So that's probably something I got better at, because if I was writing that a couple of years ago, perhaps I would show a little bit more, you know, biased. But now I'm looking at it from an outside perspective. I think it helps that I moved away and come with Bournemouth for a season, so I'm not always so involved in the club. I can look at it from an outside perspective, and, you know, and I think that helped. And covering Slamton a couple of years ago, I was quite biased. I would say, you know, make statements that would get me, you know, might get me a few likes on Twitter, but it's not really that professional, and nor is it very fairly accurate. I'd say, you know, Danny Ings, best striker in England, he deserves that England call-up, where maybe that was me being a little bit biased in my Slamton fan talking. So, yeah, it's been difficult, but having that year away, like I say, it's allowed me to have that perspective. And now, although I really support Slamton, I'm not quite as, you know, when I'm watching a game, I'm always thinking about my job and what I can write, rather than just getting swept away and wanting Stuart Armstrong or Adam Armstrong to score a penalty, you know?
So you mentioned you're going to do an article here on Ruben Selles here in a little bit. But if without maybe exposing or giving too many secrets away from that, the question was really about what is the back office and the shakeup for this past offseason? And what are the changes you think that the new staff will help and attribute to the team going into the new year?
Listen, I think there was a obvious and accepted time to change at the end of last season after the Leicester game. I think everyone knew inside the Staple, outside in the fan base, that things had grown stale. Ralph needed new impetus, new
but
support,
Calvin Davis, I mean,
yeah, exactly. He's a legend, and it's tough. But I applaud Sports Republic for doing that, because the easy decision would have just been to get rid of Ralph. But they decided to take the longer option and get, you know, change the whole backroom staff. And you know, Carl Martin, he's really high regarded. He was shadowing Ralph, not last year, but the year before that. So he knows the Ralph style particularly well. Then he went back to the under-18s last year, had, you know, really good success there. And now, unlike, I think it's Calvin Davis, he's going to replace him in that type of remit. He's now, during games, he's up in the by the Itchian with the analysts, and he's feeding back information, and he's the guy who's in charge of Slamton in possession. So I like to think that Ralph's given him more responsibility then, but maybe he previously did under the previous three coaches. Alex Clapham, he was the other first team coach, he was a journalist. He used to write, he's got his own website on tactical analysis. He's really in depth, and he knows all the nuances of the pressing system. So you'd like to think having someone that well versed in it, as well as doing set plays, as well as being in charge of everything dead ball, is another weight off Arsenal's shoulders from doing absolutely everything. And just lastly, Selez, he's been at 10 different clubs, 7 different countries, and he's only 39. And he's not just been an assistant manager, he's been a manager, he's been a fitness coach, he's been an analyst. He's done so many things, and he's got such a varied skill set that you think he can only be better and improve. And from what you hear, I think the players are really, really impressed by him. So that's hopefully something that Southampton can be happy about and take it into the new season as well.
That's fantastic, because, well, on top of that, what else should we be optimistic about going into the new year?
The international break, I think.
Just the young players, because although it's a risk, it's so, so exciting. And I said it this season, but especially compared to last year, it didn't feel there as many storylines around Southampton apart from, are they going to finish 13th or 17th? But nowadays, you've got a lot of young players coming in. Potential Ralph looks like hopefully he's going to be re-energised. He can get that smile back, get that passion back, and if they can go on a run of form and actually, rather than win 4 out of 6 games and then lose the next 10, they can find a bit of consistency. And that's the thing Southampton are searching for. That's the thing that I really want more than anything else. Just being a team that is stable and it doesn't have to veer from one result to another about questioning Ralph's future or not.
So would you say stability is the biggest concern that the team needs to address or take care of going into the new year?
Yeah, I think since Ralph's come, it's just fluctuated like you wouldn't believe, hasn't it? Last year, they were in a good position. Season faded away. After this year, in February, they beat Spurs. I know the hierarchy were really, really keen to, let's just kick on now. Let's use this as a springboard. And then faded out again, didn't it? So that's something I think Southampton need to do. And if they can have these runs of form where they're really, really good, and then when they drop off, they're still managing to eke out draws and not just lose comfortably and get hammered every week, that should serve Southampton better, and it could be the difference between finishing 17th and in the top 10 as well. So if a top 12, top 10 finish, if you offer me that, I'd certainly take it right now.
I think we all would definitely take any. Yeah. I think any non-relegation place is always good. just at a baseline and then build
progress
from there. But yeah, progress.
Definitely.
All right, so a little slight pivot away from what we've been talking about, but I'm really, with working with The Athletic and a subscription-type service, it's 2022-2023 season here. Piracy is still going to be a big issue for both journalism and for television. What trends do you see, anticipate in sports journalism for the future? And then if there's anything specifically related to the Premier League or The Athletic that you can share about that, obviously, for those who are here to support, quality journalism and having The Athletic being purchased by New York Times, as an American, seeing all that, it's just really curious to see how that would play out for in your perspective.
Obviously, The Athletic has been taken over by the New York Times earlier this year, I believe. So I'm not sure how that would influence it, but I think it can only be a good thing. I do think subscription-based models will be the future, because I know a lot of people tend to raise their eyebrows at The Athletic charging to read articles, but it's the same as reading anything else in the paper. If you get a paper every day, it's a lot cheaper than that, and you've got access to podcasts, to thousands of different articles, and with subscription based it gives you the license to not do as many articles but make sure they're really, really high in-depth, high quality, so you know that it's not just going to be in a newspaper where you're limited to a word count. You can put as much attention, as much effort into any piece you want. There's one piece that I'm hoping to do this season, and I won't say yeah in case it doesn't come off, but it's going to take months, and that's the thing of a subscription model. You are afforded months to do the pieces that fans really care about, rather than just rush it and think, okay, I need to get a certain amount of articles out a day. So I think that's the way journalism's going. In terms of piracy, you can't help that sometimes, but I'm not sure if it's too much of an issue in terms of screenshotting and stuff like that. So for £1.99 or whatever it is at the moment, I think it's really extremely good value. And if you like in-depth features and like to know everything about your club, yeah, I think it's perfect for you.
So Sports Republic, the multi-club ownership model, so City Football Group, the Red Bull Empire. What are the thoughts on the Saints progressing towards that type of ownership model, if that's anything coming up down the pipeline within the next calendar year or the rest of the season. And I guess what do you feel about that as a means to the future of football?
I think it's good because Southampton are the focal point of this multi-club model. If they were one of the feeder clubs, then maybe you'd have an issue. But the fact that they're the best and they will be the club that all the other clubs will be looking at, and maybe their best players will come to Southampton, or you know, and you can loan players out. I think it's a really, really good model. I think Man City, you know, obviously Southampton to a lesser extent, but they've had really good success as well. So Sports Republic are proactive. And that's a good thing about multi-club model. You can't just sit there and take your money. You've got to be proactive. You've got to make sure every single area of your business is improving. So Samson and Sports Republic are going to be more hands-on than Gal was, although I'm not sure that's too difficult. But also at the same time, though, they're giving autonomy still to Martin Semmers, to Matt Crocker, to Ralph to a lesser extent as well. So I think it can only be a good thing. And something I think Southampton fans should be happy about, because they've always invested in youth. Youth academy football has been arguably their best USP in recent years. And having a multi-club model should only improve this. So, yeah, for sure, I think it's a good thing. And hopefully it will start bearing fruit sooner rather than later.
So there always seems to be one, two, maybe three players on the season who tend to be the scapegoats. I think we've talked about on this.
Yeah, I think Kev's already got his name on McCarthy.
We've got Bednarik and McCarthy. Ultimately, that's one. Do those two deserve the hate? And then two is a little bit larger question of like, what's the balance between giving an appropriate, healthy criticism towards players that we feel that need to be acting or playing better?
It's a very good question. I think it's only natural to have a scapegoat. It's just natural reaction. Just if you support a club, there's always going to be players that you really like, your favourites, and players you don't like, and you're going to be biased about it. It's going to influence you. And you're perhaps the players you don't like, you're always looking at their mistakes more than, you know, the players you really do like. So I think some of the criticism is warranted for sure. When McCarthy fails to save at his near post, or he comes out and kicks a straight
shot, or fails to say that he's injured.
I don't want to get involved in that, because that was a car crash of a game, yeah, wasn't it? Even though it was a draw. The Bednarik thing, it's a strange one for me, because he's long been Ralph's favourite, and there is a feeling that, you know, a couple of years ago he was one of Sam's favourites as well. The way he was, you know, put his body on the line, Ralph's firefighter, as he was called him. I think where the issue comes from is that he hasn't really learned from his mistakes. It's similar to Stevens. He's the same player, he's making the same decisions as he is now than he was 4 years back. And I think that's where fans maybe get frustrated. You can obviously tell me better than I could, but it just looks like he's still making the same, say, he's still scoring own goals, deflected efforts, you know, he's getting out of pace in the channels, his positioning, it's quite naive at times. So, of course, there's criticism. But like yesterday, there's a goal that, although he ended up flat on his backside, he wasn't solely at fault. And I don't know if I saw a lot of that or a lot of that reasoning on social media. So, yeah, it certainly needs to be balanced, and it's just human nature at the end of the day.
All right, it's the last and most important one of all. You're walking down late night in downtown Southampton. You've got one Saints player you can pick who's going to end up being on your side in a fight when you get picked off. Who do you want on your side in the back? They have to be current. And who do you want in a back alley fight?
Well, yeah, first answer would be Oral May, wouldn't it? But he just seems like a too nice a bloke. Mm-hmm. I would have said Fraser Forster if he was here.
Mm-hmm. Tied last year, so that was my go-to for last year.
Oh, I'm gonna go Shea Adams. I think he's thick set. I think he's quick, so if he wants to run away, we can run away as well. He's, you know, I like to think Shea as well, but yeah, Oral May will be the first answer, wouldn't it?
I've got a question actually on transfer policy. Our policy is signing youth, building them up, and then, yeah, seeing what they can do from that. But is this model successful in the Premier League? Because I mean, I don't know what the plan is for Sport Republic and what they, you know, what they hope to achieve in the next three or four years or whatever. Is it just to, you know, buy these young players for cheap, progress, sell them off for a profit, you know, and while treading water in the Premier League? Or do they want to progress and do they want to get back to those days of the Koeman and Pochettino?
I think that's $1 million question, to be honest with you, Paul. I think the first option looks quite likely, judging by this summer and the direction of travel. They started last year with Brozier and Livramento. That looks like it's going to be one in terms of buying players between 17 and 23. When we did the Joe Shields piece, a lot of people that said it thought that was going to be the case. Buy players between 17 and 23, flip them over for a profit, reinvest. Whether that's sustainable and maybe you can stay in the Premier League, that's a different question. Maybe with the better young players coming and growing, they can incrementally get better and better. So it's going to be interesting to see how the success of this summer is interpreted in years to come. Because if this is really good summer and all the players hit the ground running, Slanton will continue this. But if they go down or they have a season where it's lukewarm, they might think, okay, we're still going to invest in young players, but we obviously need to some experience. We can't have a 27-year-old James Ward-Prowse being the granddad of the group, for God's sake. So maybe this summer will determine how Slanton's policy is in the next years.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, I'm going to the fan forum and I want to pose that question as in, what's the five-year plan? Is there a five-year plan? Are they planning to make a profit and get out? I mean, I just don't know. I just want to know what their plan is, if they are going to progress and keep going. But I don't think it's quite sustainable with all these youngsters. I just don't see it happening, especially in the modern Premier League. A lot of teams are spending a lot of money. And if we've got the money there, you know, I would like to see those more experienced players come in also.
It is a thing, because I know there's an option of another player instead of Lavia, in the same position for the same money. And this guy was, I think he made 100 first-team appearances at a club. And he did go on to move to another Premier League club. But he was an option. And the fact they chose Lavia, who's not played in the Premier League, is a risk. But they obviously have so much trust and so much faith in him being a better player than this other player. So that's really interesting to see. And it is a huge gamble. But if this pays off, the rewards, not only financially, but the excitement that's in there, is the league position perhaps, the taking other Premier League clubs by surprise, it's vast. So that's going back to the question earlier. This is something that's really exciting me ahead of the season.
Well, that's good. One more question before we go into the predictions. B team, which player do you think is going to make the biggest
jump? Don Ballard.
Yeah.
I think he's really, really good. And I'm surprised he didn't go away to Austria. But I think another year in a B team, he's only
scored 2 again yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. I think another year in a B team where he can just score goals for fun, it's going to be immense. And hopefully we can see him maybe towards back end of the season, similar to Tyler Dibling.
Although he's gone. And I hear that Jimmy J. Morgan's being scouted as well. I mean, he's very young, so I don't know, you know, what his future is.
But with Ballard, I think there's no rush on him, but he's a guy that they're really excited about. Good striker. Good head on young shoulders. He's got a fantastic group of people around him who will guide him and are sensible. They're not trying to rush him to either be in the first team or get him out and get him on loan. I think he's going to take nice and calm. But Ballard's someone that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing in the B team.
Yeah, me too. And also, just quickly on the women's team, how do you think they're going to fare in the championship?
Well, they've started holding the team, haven't they? it's great. It's great to see, and I'm so delighted. Like, going back to what I said earlier about my passion for other aspects of the club, this is brilliant. Like, this is going to be on equal footing, hopefully, with the men's at some point. And there'll be more games at St Mary's this year. Hope there's going to be really good attendances. And there's some players that were there last year that are still there, and I think they can progress as well. You know, Ella Pusey, I think, is really quite an exciting player. There's several new signings as well. The New Zealand international. You know, that's a big coup for Southampton, who only turned professional this year. So I'm hoping to cover these cover the women in a lot more detail, and hopefully we'll get something out in the next month or so on this, because yeah, it's something that's really interesting, and Slamton have made fantastic improvement and quick improvement in this in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and just they haven't played a lot of pre-season obviously because their game against Charlton was called off last week, but they played today against Lewis, yeah, who were also in the Championship, so that will be a good marker. I'll be checking that out because they kick off at midday today, I believe. Predictions then. Tim, can you take some notes on these, because I always fail to write them down and then I've got nothing to go back on, and I don't want to go back and listen to our predictions. So yeah, if you make a note of them and then remind us how wrong we are. I'm gonna start with Jacob and all of these because you're the guest. So Jacob, where are we finishing this season?
I've got to not be biased. I'm gonna go 15th or 16th.
I'm taking 16th.
I would love to say top 12, and I wouldn't rule that out, but just from last year to this year, yeah, 15th or 16th. Okay.
Kevin?
If you've revealed you're going 16th, I think I've got a feeling that everyone's going to go 16th. I'm going to say 17th. And I really don't see where the goals are coming from.
And Tim?
19th.
No!
Whoa! No! Oh, no.
Oh, mm-hmm. Dear. That had to be you, didn't it? Oh, yeah. Tim. Okay.
I don't feel calm. I guess I'll explain since it is relegation, but I don't see us out of any of the teams who currently stayed up last year. What the progression is. I think that we're going to be a fantastic championship team, and that we have the average age of our signings are below the age of 21. But I don't see the thing about Premier League. The thing about that is you need to stay consistent year in and year out. You can't necessarily do that when you have 20-year-olds, and the expectations of doing that is a lot.
Alan Hansen say
that? You don't win
anything with kids. Alan Hansen said, and then Man United went and won the league. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Top scorer, Jacob.
Oh, James Ward-Prowse. I'm not sure Slamton will get too many goals from open play, so I'm relying on James Ward-Prowse set pieces again.
Okay, I'm going to go Adam Armstrong. That might be a surprise, but I'm going to go for around 11 goals this season. So I'm going to take Adam Armstrong. I'll take that. Kevin, what about you?
We'd probably finish higher than 16th.
Everyone else is going to score more, that's all.
Yeah, I think, our goals are spread all over the place, aren't they? Mainly from midfield. So I'm going to say Prowsey as well.
Okay. Tim?
Yeah, it's Prowsey.
Oh, I'm the only one going away. Okay. Jacob, champions?
Manchester City. I think they'll do it again.
Okay, I'm going to take Liverpool. Based on yesterday.
I'm saying Liverpool as well.
It will be Manchester City.
United, is it? Let's face it. Jacob, top four.
Man City, Liverpool, Tottenham, Chelsea.
Wow. I am going to go Liverpool, City, Chelsea, United.
I'm going to stick with Liverpool winning the league. City, second. Chelsea, third. And Arsenal, fourth. Mm.
So I've got City, Liverpool. It's going to be Spurs, and then I've got and then Manchester United.
No Chelsea.
No, I think they'll finish fifth or sixth, wow. And Tuchel they'll want Tuchel out.
Wow, that is bold. Jacob, relegation then, starting with 20th.
Oh, don't make me say Bournemouth. Leeds. I'm gonna say Fulham bottom, Bournemouth 19th, Leeds 18th.
Wow,
got it.
Okay, I'm gonna take Nottingham Forest 20th. Bournemouth, Jacob, 19th. And I'm going to go Leeds, 18th. Fulham will make it, I think. Fulham, 17th, and then Saints.
I'm going Bournemouth, bottom, then Fulham, 19th, and Leeds, 18th.
You think Forest will make it, Kev?
Yeah. Yeah, they've got Lionel Jess.
Okay. And just you, Tim.
Forest, 20th, us, 19th. And I think I did have a regular team.
Liverpool.
No, I had Brentford 18th.
Oh, okay.
I had Brentford 18th. So I thought Fulham and Bournemouth would stay.
Okay. Jacob, this is an interesting one. first sacking. Now, when I looked at this, I looked at the odds at who's going to be sacked first, and actually Ralph was the favourite, but I'm not going to go with Ralph. But what are you going to go with, Jay?
I think it depends how Bournemouth's transfer window ends up, but I can really, really see Scott Parker either walking away or going fairly quickly if their current squad stays like it is, because it's woefully underprepared. But I think if you look at Frank Lampard, you just think you look like a guy that could be sacked by October. Just the way Everton run. So I'm going to go for Lampard.
I did think about Lampard and Parker, but I'm going to go with Jesse Marsh.
Okay.
That's Michael too.
And then me.
You said Patrick Vieira last year. He's still there.
I did say Patrick. Yep. I did say Patrick Vieira. I'm going to say Brendan Rodgers.
No way.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Brendan Rodgers. He's going to get off. They're going to get Leicester's going to get a terrible start, and he'll be gone in early October. Wow.
Another bold one. Jacob, who's winning the Champions League?
Oh, I'm going to go Man City. Every year I say Man City, so surely their year this year.
It's exactly my thoughts. I always say Man City. It's gonna happen soon, and I think it will be this year. They're going to lose out in the league to Liverpool, but they're focused on the Champions League this year. So, yeah, Man City for me too, Tim.
I normally end up saying Paris Saint-Germain, don't I? But I'm going to jump on the bandwagon with Man City again.
So that means it's definitely going to be Paris Saint-Germain this year then.
I guess I'll be different, and I'll go with Bayern.
Oh, minus Lewandowski.
I think that they will be just fine.
I think they will too. Jacob, promotion. Who's getting up from the Championship?
I know everyone says it, but I think Norwich.
Bad start yesterday.
Yeah, I know, but the way they are, just experience, just the way they go about it, it looks like it could be Norwich. But really interested to see how Company Burnley gets on. I watched them on Friday night, and they just look like
passing it a lot,
completely
yeah.
different side. Yeah, they're actually passing on the floor as well, which, and not having their goalkeepers take free kicks from inside in their half all the time. So that's really, really quite a positive. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Company Burnley, and hopefully they can go up as well. I do like
that. So you got Norwich, Burnley, and who's the playoff winner?
Oh, I think it's going to be one of the teams that went down last year. I'm going to say Watford again.
Not dissimilar to mine, actually. I'm going to go Norwich are going to be champions. I'm going to go Sheffield United. And then I'm going to go Watford winning the playoffs.
In no particular order. I'm going to throw Watford, Burnley, and West Brom.
Oh, okay.
They got a back-to-back sometime.
All right. So initially, right when Burnley went down, I thought that they were going to be an absolute stable point of the championship for the next 5 to 10 years or so, with Company and a couple of their different signings. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to pop right back up, and he's going to do something fantastic. Then secondly is what we're looking for. I am going to take the great team known
Millwall.
As no. I think that, and here is my truly bold prediction, I think Luton Town is going to take second.
Wow.
And then I think Watford will be probably Watford or Sheffield United, but I'm going to go with Watford as the playoff winner. So,
excellent. Right. Okay. So now a little bit of fun here. It's just over or under. And so I'm going to give you a topic, Jacob, and a number, and you're going to tell me if it's over or under. Okay. So last season we scored 43 goals. Over or under?
Over.
I'm going to go under.
Under.
You're going under. This is nice and positive, isn't it? A great start. Tim, over under 43.
Under.
Under. Okay. Goals against, we conceded 67.
It's got to be under. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, I'm going under. I'm going under. Kev?
Yeah, under.
Timothy?
Under as well.
Okay, goals then for individuals. Adam Armstrong, obviously 2. Everyone's got to go over that, right?
Yeah.
Over.
Good.
Over the crossbar.
Yeah, it's going to be over.
Anyway, Sekou Mara. Now, this is a tricky one because you need to give him time to settle. And, you know, he didn't have many minutes. We don't know how many minutes he's going to be guaranteed with. So, Jacob, I'm going to give you 8.
8? Oh, under.
I say under 2.
Yeah, I'm going to go under.
That's the easiest under.
Really? Okay, maybe I should take it to 5 easy. Then.
What about the 6 that he scored last
season? Yeah, okay, 6 then. We'll go 6. You still saying under, Jacob?
I'm still saying under. I think it's a lot of responsibility for him to score that many. I think, yeah. First season, just let him bed him.
Okay. But then, you know, how many did Brovia score last year?
6 in the Premier League.
Okay, Prowse then, 11.
Under.
Under?
Yeah, I'll go under. Bearing in mind, you picked him as your top scorer, guys.
He had 10 last year, is that correct?
He did.
So JWP, I mean, the odds are in your favor that something he'll get injured or something like that, so under is probably the correct answer. But I think 10 or 11 is about right, especially as he's the penalty kick taker.
Yeah. And Prowse the assists. I'm going to give you 8.
Over. Ooh.
I'm going to go under.
Under.
Okay. Salisu, yellow cards. Let's go 9.
I'd like to think he's learned a little bit more. Under.
Under. Yeah, I'm going to go under.
Yeah, under.
We hope.
Under it is.
Okay.
How many did you get last season? You got 8 last season.
I don't know. 10 maybe? James Ward-Prowse, free kicks. I'm going to give you 4.
Over.
Ooh. I'm going to... Can I take the same?
You can push. Big push.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'm going to take... he's going to score 4.
4. Yeah, that's a nice... That's a good number, isn't it? I'll take the same.
I will take 3, but I will take under.
Okay. Wins, Jacob. 9.
Can I say the same? I'll say the same.
I'm going to go under. That's bad, isn't it? When you think of it. Yeah, I'm going to take under.
Christ.
See how positive you're feeling, Kev.
We're gonna finish 17th, but we're gonna win 10 or more games. We're just not gonna draw any.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work, does it? Tim, 9 wins.
Under.
Oh dear. Points 40.
Over.
Yay! I'm gonna take under. I reckon.
Under.
And then everybody else is taking under. Yep.
Under. Okay. Clean sheets. 8, definitely under, surely.
I want to go over.
Hey, new keeper and all.
Back 3. Yeah.
Can I go the same?
Yeah.
Under for me.
Okay. Red cards, 2.
Over.
Yeah, I'm taking over.
I'll take the same again.
Okay, Tim?
Good one. I will take 3, so over.
Okay. And the last one. Penalties scored. I'm going to give you 4, Jacob.
Over.
I'm going to take over too.
Yeah, go on.
I will take a push.
Okay. Four.
I'll take 4.
Right, that is about it. Jacob, before we let you go, can I get a prediction for the Spurs game from you? Particularly the lineup. I want you to go through the lineup and give me a score prediction also.
Okay, so the lineup, I'm going to go 3-5-2. Bazunu. Goal, back 3, Salisu, Bednarik, Belakotchap, wing backs, Walker Peters and Perot, midfield, Lavia, Aribo, Ward-Prowse, strikers, Adams and Stuart Armstrong.
Oh, and Mara off the bench.
Yes.
Okay, and a score prediction?
I'm going to go 1-1.
Oh, take that, definitely take that. We don't often do very well at Spurs, but yeah, that's great. I'll take it. Anyway, yeah, I'm sure everyone is following you across social media, but for some reason, if they're not, can you remind us how to follow you, Jay?
Yeah, so you can find me on The Athletic for Samson's coverage, but also on Twitter at @J_Tanswell, and then that's the link to all my pieces and all my rambling tweets as well. So, yeah,
perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I really, really look forward to checking out your stuff throughout the season. Yeah, best of luck. Really look forward to hearing from you again. And any time you want to come back, if we haven't put you off, that is, you're more than welcome. And I understand that you're going to be on Total Saints.
Yes, yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and yeah, for sure, anytime. I really enjoyed today, but yeah, we'll be on the Total Saints podcast with Alfie House on the Echo. We'll be swapping, and maybe sometimes we'll be together as well, so looking forward to that, and you know, just discussing Southampton in general wherever I am.
Perfect. Thank you so much for giving up your time, Jacob. It's been amazing.
Appreciate it. Cheers, guys.
Lovely stuff.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Okay, then, we turn our attention to the Premier League now. That's so good to hear. Tottenham next week, Saturday the 6th of August, 3 o'clock kickoff, and that is at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Biggest win against Tottenham at Tottenham was a 4-1 win back in October of 1897. Do you remember that, Kev?
Yeah, of course.
Like yeah, and that was in the Southern League. We've had a few 3-1s over the years. January 1971, Hugh Fisher and Mick Shannon with a double. 1990 FA Cup third round, 3-1 victory, Letizier, Rod Wallace and Barry Horn. And September 2003, a 3-1 win again, of course. James Beattie with a double and an Anthony Gardner own goal. Head to head, then, Saints have won 65, Spurs have won 85, and we've drawn 51 times. Before we get your preview, Tim, I've got a little bit of a quiz here for you. It's not much, but yes, I just want to know where your mind is. Highest paid players in the team in the Premier League and the team's biggest transfer. No cheating now. I'm going to give you Crystal Palace.
Highest paid player in so the Zaha.
Yeah, how much?
180k a week.
Not a bad guess. Nice. And the record transfer.
We'll go with Guehi. Or 20? Was it 23?
No. For him? No. I will tell you. It's Christian Benteke. 27 million quid.
Wow.
So there we go.
So was that because he was from
probably
Liverpool?
And he was good once. He could actually score.
Yeah, when he was a bit, I remember banging him.
Yeah,
well.
Good player he was. Nice, strong, good in the air, good finisher. Yeah, we could have used him. I'd have taken him. Tim, right, Spurs then. How's it going to go?
Shit.
Right, and then next week.
Going back, probably our best game of the year was Tottenham away. If you ever got to take a look, please look at the highlights. The first half was the most ridiculous I've seen us play in any game whatsoever. Absolutely ridiculous. We had over 10 shots in goal in the first half alone. Two late goals from two late goals from JWP crosses for Mohamed Elianoussi and Che Adams in the rain. Our friend Stevie was there. Shout out to him. He sent me some snaps from that a while back, and I was completely jealous of that game. But nonetheless, Spurs took fourth last year, 71 points, qualifying for the Champions League under Antonio Conte. Spurs swiftly corrected their mistake of hiring Nuno Espirito Santo at the beginning, even though he got manager of the month in August of 2021, and brought in Conte in early November. From there, this offseason, Spurs injected $150 million in capital to use for a number of signings, so the Conte way going from there. They signed, for most notably, Ivan Perisic, Basuma from Brighton, Richarlison from Everton, Clement Lenglet from Barcelona on loan, Jed Spence from Middlesbrough, and our boy Fraser Forster on a free from us. The only two real notables that are outgoing, number one is Steven Bergwijn for Ajax, and then CCV, Cameron Carter-Vickers, American center back, is after a year loan spell in Celtic, they did sign him permanently. But they do still have, since it's the end of the signing period isn't over yet, we are still looking at probably a lot of outgoings from them. Definitely some more impending ones. People that are rumored for them are Sergio Reguilón, Giovanni Lo Celso, Joe Roden, Emerson Royal, Harry Winks, Tanguy Ndombele, potentially Brian Gill on loan, and then Japhet Tanganga, who we've been linked to every now and then as well. But, yeah. So those are looking for like the outgoing. So they're still to us, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Some of those players might play, but I don't think they're going to any of them are going to feature primarily. So knowing Antonio Conte, he's got a traditional 3-5-2 formation, provides that they make the best of wingbacks and pushes the fitness of all of his team to the limits. So what are we looking for when it comes to their expected formation? Fortunately for us, Richarlison is suspended for one game for throwing a flare into the fans, but that's fortunate for us. Yeah. So we've got so Hugo Lloris is going to start with their back three. You'll have Ben Davies as a left center back, Eric Dyer and Christian Romero. For wing backs of Ivan Perisic and Matt Doherty.
No Spence.
Although it's spelled Doherty. Yes. No, Spence will not start. He'll come on. And then you've got in the middle field two of PEH, so Pierre-Emile Højbjerg along with Rodrigo Bentancur,
Sun
Kane and Kulusevski. And Kulusevski will be there. The subs, since we've got five subs in the year, things that I'll feature that I look to expect either in some part because of the five subs, you'll see players on the bench who will definitely get on the field at some point. Bissouma, Spence, and Lucas Moura are my three locks to get on the pitch.
To score.
Yep. What is our key battle? Well, it's literally just us against ourselves, and if we can handle a back three, I do predict that we will also be in a back three formation. And he was really good about Jacob was very great about looking to see what type of formation we would expect. I think what we lined up against Villarreal will be great, except I don't think Mara will start. So seeing that Bazunu will be our starting keeper, Salisu, Benarek, and ABK, I think Gineppo will start, although that's not necessarily what I would prefer. I think Gineppo and KWP, I think it'll be Ward-Prowse, Lavia, Stu, Aribo, and I think Che will be the starter up front.
Excellent. Okay. All that's left is the predictions. So I'll start things off then. I had this score written down a long time ago, as soon as the transfers were announced. Sorry, the fixtures were announced, and I haven't swayed from it at all. And I know that some people in the Discord have said this as well. But I'm not changing it. I'm going to go a 3-1 Spurs win.
That's exactly what I've written down.
Oh, okay. Are you staying?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with
that. Okay. I know that Alex is also going for a 3-1. And Tim, we already have your prediction. You said 9-0, didn't you?
That is correct. 9-0 Saints win as Ralph licks the tears off of Antonio Conte on the sideline.
Okay. But really?
No. 2-0 Spurs win.
Okay, perfect.
I really like how Jacob's so optimistic compared to us.
Yeah, it's not a great start, is it? Okay, all that's left this week then. Kevin, I've got a where am I for you. Are you interested?
What if I say
then
no?
Then I will read it out for Tim.
Okay.
Okay, so you understand. The first clue was 5 points. The second clue was 4 points and so on down to the fifth clue for 1 point. Where am I? Okay, so this city is 128 miles from St. Mary's Stadium. You'd be mad to go for that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And approximately 103 miles south of Old Trafford.
Mm. You're deep in the middle. So.
Ooh. Ooh. Okay. Clue three for 3 points. One of the founding members of the inaugural Premier League finishing 3 points above the relegation zone.
No. Right.
Clue four for 2 points then. In the county of West Midlands on the River Sherborne, if you know your rivers.
Done.
You want the fifth clue?
Yeah, I thought.
Okay, you'll get it on this one. Nicknamed the Sky Blues with a capacity of 32,000.
Yeah, Coventry.
Yeah, Coventry City. And the name of their stadium?
Wasn't it? Yeah, it's named after the sponsor, isn't it?
It was known as the Rico Arena, but it has changed. It is now known as the CBS Arena or Coventry Building Society Arena. So there we go, Kevin. 1 point.
Okay. Wow.
Sorry, I put the pressure on you there, didn't I?
Yeah, well, at least I got a score to better finish.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, right. That is it for this week then. Next week, we will be back for the Spurs game and we will preview Leeds United at home, our return to St. Mary's. My thanks to, our thanks to Jacob Tanswell for coming on today. I will put all his details on the show notes. So please go and follow him and subscribe to The Athletic for all his pieces. And get on Twitter, and he's very, very active. Really nice guy as well. His DMs are open, so yeah, so contact him.
Yeah, dick pics, send them all away.
But yes, so from me, Kevin, and Tim, up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up at Southampton.
Podcast Network.